Does truth exist?
Because you have faith, does that make this book true?
Does God exist?
So when someone says there is no truth, if you apply the claim to itself, what should you say? Is that true?
They don't think Christianity's true.
They're talked out of it. You know why they're talked out of it? Because they've never been talked into it.
Cross-examining skeptical and atheistic views. Welcome to Cross-Examine with Dr. Frank Turek.
Ladies and gentlemen, there's only two ways to learn something. You can learn it through your own experience, or you can learn it through someone else's experience. Trust me, you don't have enough time or expertise to learn everything through your own experience. You need to rely on the experience of others and, of course, God in order to learn what you need to know. And the best way still to this day to learn the material you need to know to be a better disciple of Christ and just to be a better citizen is to read. If you don't read, you can't really learn that much on your own. You need to learn from the experience of others and, of course, the revelation of God. And people are always saying, well, Frank, how come you always have people on here talking about books? You can make money. I don't make any money off of books other people write. No, I don't. But I feel so strongly about the people that I have here on this program because they're putting out such good stuff that you need to know that I want you to know about it. Because you can't learn this all on your own. You need to read. If you want to be a leader, you got to be a reader. Now, one of the leaders out there in the apologetics world is Sean McDowell, Dr. Sean McDowell. You may know of his father, Dr. Josh McDowell, but today we're talking to my friend, Dr. Sean McDowell, a member of our CIA faculty, PhD. He is a professor out at Biola. He has written almost 20 books now and a brand new apologetic study Bible for students he has edited. And we're going to spend the first two segments talking about that. And then a little bit later on in the program, we'll have my friend Jay Warner Wallace on to talk about a new resource he has for young people as well. So, Sean, great having you on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me back, Frank.
Now, Sean, tell me about this apologetic study Bible for students. I know there was one that came out in 2010. I think I contributed a couple of articles to that. But this is an updated new version, correct?
That's right. It's updated with the translation. Was the HCSB, now it's the CSB. Uh-huh. So it's a great, easy to read, I think, accurate translation. But essentially, in 2010, the one that you helped us with, we came up, let me take a step back. In 2008, there was an apologetic study Bible released. And I started talking with the folks at Brahm and Holman and said, what if we do a student version of this? There's nothing like this out there. So I got together with some of my buddies, people like Brett Kunkel, Eric Johnson, said, all right, we have this opportunity. What features do we need to have to most help out students? So we came up with things like personal stories we put throughout it, footnotes on the bottom that all deal with apologetics questions. Brett has a really cool feature of tactics, kind of based on Greg Kokel's teaching on tactics. We have 65 of the most common twisted scriptures.
Wow.
And little sidebars responding to them that you'll hear from, say, you know, other religions or cults. And then we got the top 120 questions people were asking about God, the Bible, other religions, ethics, truth, and give responses to them. Now, this one in 2017, we just took everything we did, and it sold well, which tells me we kind of just scratched an itch. But we started saying, all right, since 2010, what questions have changed? What articles do we want to take out? Which ones do we want to add? And it just came out last month, and I am super pleased with how it's turned out.
Give me a couple of the new topics that you've added since 2010 to the Apologetic Study Bible for Students, Sean. What are they? And they're probably a big reflection of where our culture is going, aren't they?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'll give you three that we give specifically. One is probably everybody's expecting it, but in 2010, nobody was wrestling, at least on any public level, with the transgender question. Mm-hmm. It was not on people's radar. So we added a chapter for Christians to think thoughtfully about that. A second one, how do I defend religious freedom? How do we actually make a case for religious freedom? And then third, Amy Hall from Stand to Reason added one, are singles condemned to a life of loneliness? And there's really been this pushback on the church that if you're saying marriage is between a man and a woman, then you're condemning singles to this life of just misery and loneliness. So we're trying to help Christians think through that. We also added one on race. I mean, we've had racial issues throughout the history of our culture, but that seemed to kind of foment it in the past few years. So those are some of the ones that we added in, which says a lot about how our culture's changed.
I don't know if you have it in front of you or not, Sean, or you can remember. If not, that's fine. You don't have the whole book memorized. But I'd be curious to see what Amy wrote about the singleness issue. Do you remember any point or two that she had in that article?
Well, she makes a couple points. Number one, she says, you can be fully fulfilled as a human being without being married. I mean, Jesus Christ was not married, and he was a fully actualized, fulfilled human being. So God has made humanity in general, male and female, and that reflects his image. But the Bible talks about singleness being a gift. So she makes the point that it's the body of Christ and the larger Christian family, that even people who are singles, we need to stop looking at them like they're outcasts and, hey, when are you going to get married? And realize that that's a season of life, sometimes people for their entire life, that God has blessed them or called them to just serve the church, to serve the culture, to be a gift to the body of Christ. So she's not saying, oh, this is just easy, but kind of trying to say, we got to look at this a little differently scripturally. And even as a church, how we talk about this is really, really important.
Yes, that's an interesting article that I'm sure is probably worth just the price of the Apologetic Study Bible for students. We're talking to Dr. Sean McDowell. He is the editor of the brand new updated Apologetic Study Bible for students. I wanted to let you guys know about this, our listeners, because young people are walking away from the church once they leave the home, somewhere around 75%, depending upon what survey you look at. They need a resource like this that can help them stay grounded. And who are some of the people, by the way, Sean, other than you mentioned Brett Kunkel, you mentioned Amy Hall, I'm sure you've contributed to it. Who are some of the other scholars that have contributed these real world, easy to understand answers to some of the toughest problems out there?
Sure. So I got some recognizable apologists like yourself, like my father, people that have been around for a while and have just done great work, people like John Mark Reynolds, but really J. Warner Wallace, but really what I asked here is I said, who are people that know culture? Who are people that are working with students and can really communicate with them well? So we got a few youth pastors. We got some young apologists. Of course, you'll find names in here that you'll recognize. Greg Kokel did one for us. Jonathan Morrow did one. John Stonestreet did a great chapter. Mark Matlock. So we have some real recognizable names. But more so than just pulling specifically for names, we really wanted people that understand student culture, could communicate in a way that kids would go, oh, I get that. That makes sense. I remember that. And so we've got some kind of young budding apologists, so to speak, which really made it kind of fun.
Wonderful. And the features of the new Bible, how do they differ from the 2010 version?
Well, the main thing we did is we just expanded them. So, for example, we had, you know, these twisted scriptures, like common scriptures that say, you know, like Mormons will twist. And we added about 15 more of those throughout the Bible. We have certain stories that were written by my friend Dylan Burroughs, people of like Nabil Qureshi. We included his story, my father's story, C.S. Lewis's story. And we put those throughout so Christians reading this just see some of the people that are real defenders of the faith. And then we added a bunch of new archaeological finds from the Old Testament, New Testament. Some even, you know, since the time we wrote the last study Bible, these kind of finds are coming out all the time. So really, we took out some of the articles that were probably a little bit weaker too. And then I added one I always wanted in there. Can Christians get tattoos? I always thought, you know, what does God think about a tattoo? I always thought, why didn't I put this in here? And then we added some of the tough questions, like Tom Gilson wrote one, can you be gay and Christian? Mm. Ryan Pauley wrote one, does God send good people to hell? We have one, how should a Christian respond to Islamic jihad? So we do not shy away from the tough issues. We want to put students to think well about them.
That is a book every young person needs to have. Obviously, you need to have the Bible, but why not make it the Apologetic Study Bible for students? I'm talking to the editor, Dr. Sean McDowell, and we're going to get more into what's in that amazing book, those notes and those articles and those questions answered right after this. You're listening to Cross Examine with Frank Turek. We're back in 2 minutes.
Thank you for listening to the Cross Examine podcast. This material is made available to you for free by the contributions of listeners like you. If you wish to support future podcasts, just go to crossexamine.org and click on the donate button, or simply use the donate feature directly on our app. Thanks.
If you're low on the FM dial looking for National Public Radio, go no further. We're actually going to tell you the truth here. That's our intent anyway. You're listening to Cross-Examined with Frank Turek on the American Family Radio Network, our website, crossexamined.org. That's crossexamined with a D on the end of it, .org. And don't forget to like our Facebook pages, crossexamined.org and Dr. Frank Turek, Dr. Frank Turek. By the way, we put out a lot of short videos that you can share with your friends. I've noticed that if you send somebody a 45-minute video, they won't watch it. But if you send them a 4-minute video, they will. And many of these videos are Q&As from our college campus events, so they're pretty intriguing. But the only way you're going to see them routinely is if you like our Facebook pages. So crossexamined.org and Dr. Frank Turek. We're over our social media director, Jorge Gill, man, he's got our Facebook page to over 250,000 followers. So that's good. Join it if you would. I'm talking to my friend, Dr. Sean McDowell, and his new edited version of the Apologetics Study Bible for students is something you need to get. Just came out last month. And just before the break, Sean was saying we've got all these new topics in here that are culturally relevant. Sean, we're gonna play like a 30-second to 90-second answer on some of these I'm going to throw at you. They're in the study Bible, so if people want a more detailed answer, they can get it. But let's go through some of these. Let's start with the one you brought up. Can Christians get tattoos? Dr. Sean McDowell, go.
Yeah, so the writer who wrote a chapter in this, Andy Steiger, starts off by giving a story how he goes to Indonesia, and in some cultures it's considered rude not to have a tattoo. Oftentimes we respond against tattoos because what they've culturally become and meant to mean, rather than asking the more basic question, is it right and okay for a Christian? Now, Leviticus 19:28 says you're not to make gashes on your body for the dead or put tattoo marks on yourself. I am the Lord. You might think, game over, it's done, finished, don't have a tattoo. But as you know well, Frank, we got to look at the context. Leviticus 19 was not talking about the kinds of tattoos people can get potentially today, but he was talking about cutting up the body in certain cultic rituals. So I'm not sure that condemnation of tattoos applies specifically to why somebody may get one today. Mm-hmm. So I'd say to a student, I'd say a few things. What do your parents want? If you're a young person, you've got to listen to your parents. Second, what kind of tattoo are you getting? And third, what's your motivation behind getting a tattoo? So I think we need to slow down on this question, look at the actual context of the passages, respect appropriate authority, but ultimately ask, is it wise? What's the purpose of it? And am I respecting the body that God has given me?
Well said. How about the transgender issue? What do you have in the new Apologetic Study Bible for students on that?
Well, we basically talk about understanding gender is not a social construct like we see in the wider culture today, that as long as you feel you're a certain gender, that's true for you, that both historically and biblically, gender is tied to who we are. So if Christians are going to respond, we have to understand that true freedom comes from living according to our design, and God has made us male and made us female. But with that said, clearly, it's about 0.3% of people who wrestle with this question, but we have to have tremendous understanding, tremendous compassion, while sticking firm to biblical truth. Because for somebody to have gender dysphoria, there's a lot of hurt, there's a lot of pain, and a lot of dissonance behind it. By the way, here's an interesting point, Frank. Even the idea of transgender assumes that gender is actually objective.
Right.
If somebody says, my body does not match up with my mind, well, that only makes sense if there is such a thing as given gender. So those are a couple of things we unpack for students to think about.
Excellent, excellent. How about the problem of evil? Do you get into that much in the new Apologetic Study Bible for students?
We do, and as you know well, this one takes a ton of unpacking. So we would just make a few points, such as evil is the privation of good. You can't have evil without good. So ironically, the very question of evil, and you do a great job of raising this, presuppose the standard of good, which only makes sense if God exists. And then we just briefly talk about free will, that God has not made us to be robots. He's actually made us to be in loving relationships with him and other people. When Jesus was asked, what's the greatest commandment? He says, love God and love other people. Well, we can't love people if we're robots. Mm. If God's going to make us with a capacity to love, he has to give us the capacity to not love. And then ultimately, all the evil in this world will be laid to rest when Jesus comes back at some point in the future.
This is a big issue, and it really requires a much longer conversation. But just give us a point or two, maybe from the Apologetic Study Bible for Students. And again, I'm talking to my friend, Dr. Sean McDowell, the editor of the new Apologetic Study Bible for Students that every young person needs to have. And that is, Sean, we just see this horrific natural disaster down there in Houston, and now it's going into Louisiana. And how do you respond? Because it doesn't appear that that's related directly anyway to a free choice. So how do you respond? Why would God allow natural disasters?
Yeah, that's a great question. And what we do in the study Bible is just to lay out some guidelines and give people beginning talking points. And rather than saying we're going to solve this in a single-page article, here's a biblical general approach to apply to it. Mm-hmm. So when it comes to natural disasters, I mean, there's a couple things I would throw out there for people to think about. First off, the Christian response is, as we're seeing, to rush in there, support financially, pray for people, care for these people, love these people. That's what it says in Romans 12, when somebody's happy, be happy with them. When somebody's sad, be sad with them. This is a disaster, and throughout history, Christians have consistently come in at the moment of disaster and loved and cared for people. The second thing is we do have to ask, and this is something Hugh Ross brings up, and I would only bring this issue up after we've helped and loved for someone and they're in a position to hear this. One of the things, we live in a world in which there is cause and effect. We live in a world in which we need fires. We live in a world in which we need to have other kind of natural processes. Even certain kinds of floods, believe it or not, help recycle certain elements in the planet so we can function. If we didn't have earthquakes, we would be dead instantly, because earthquakes create a barrier that protects us from the sun and certain electromagnetic lights. So part of this, yes, it's devastating human beings, and we've lost life, but we also have to just take a step back and realize we live in a world that God has made, where there is cause and effect, where we can interact with one another, where there's choice and there's laws of physics. And ultimately, I think we can believe, and we've actually seen, William Lane Craig talks about this, that in a world in which there are some natural disasters, you see more and more people, because of seeing this, thinking about their human finitude and actually coming to Christ. So God is so good and powerful, he can even use things like this to draw people to him. So those are just a few of the quick things I would throw out there for people to wrestle with.
Yes, excellent. As C.S. Lewis famously said, that pain is God's megaphone to arouse a deaf world. And he also said, sometimes you only look up when you're on your back. And when things are going right, we may forget about God. When things start going wrong, then we suddenly go, uh-oh. Now, it's just, I don't know if it's ironic or telling. As I'm sitting here interviewing you, Sean, I get an email from your father, Josh McDowell Ministries, trying to help people in Africa. I mean, I'm just sitting here and it pops up. Just as you were saying, we got to go help people. Bam, I get an email from Josh McDowell.
That's awesome. You know, I was just writing an endorsement for a book by a friend of mine, Jeremiah Johnston, called Unimaginable.
I just did the same thing.
Did you really?
I just sent it off to him yesterday, the day of the hurricane. He's escaping the hurricane down in Houston.
I know, like pretty amazing time, and that he's actually living down there. But as you know, the premise of his book is you take Christianity out of the world and it becomes unimaginable. Mm. The greatest force for good, from hospitals to orphanages to women's rights to child labor laws, comes from Christians. So we live in a broken world affected by sin, which may have something to do with the flood that we see. Mm. Levels of sin even affects the natural world as we know it. But we are called to respond and to love people because they're made in God's image, and hopefully use this as an opportunity to see people come to Christ.
And Jesus was quick in Luke 13 to point out that if you think a natural disaster is hurting someone because they're more sinful than you, he said, no, He said, unless you repent, the same thing is going to happen to you. So a lot of times I think we look at natural disasters and we think, oh, they must be evil people over there. Look what happened to them. And Jesus is saying, no, we're all evil and we all need to repent. This is not heaven, ladies and gentlemen. Things are going to go wrong here on earth. But Jesus said, in this world, you will have trouble, but take heart, I've overcome the world. And the Apologetic Study Bible for students will give students clear, short answers to some of the toughest problems out there. So that's who I'm talking to today is my friend, Dr. Sean McDowell, who is the editor of this Bible. Now, Sean, how have people been using this new version of the Bible? What are they doing with it?
Well, a couple main ways. A ton of, say, youth pastors, because they buy Bibles for their students, or even like church staff will buy it and either have it present or give it to kids for graduation as a gift. But I actually walked into Starbucks. It's been a few months now. I walked in, I looked across. You notice how, like, sometimes someone will give you eye contact, and you'll think, wait a minute, do I know this person? And I noticed sitting in front of this mom, who's probably 35 or 40, she was sitting there reading the Apologetic Study Bible. So I went over and I just introduced myself. She said, yeah, I picked this up when I heard you speak at a church not too long ago. She goes, look, these are the questions I ask. These are the questions my kids ask. I use this as my devotional because it's written at a level that makes sense to me in the depth I need on these tough questions. So
now, I know people are probably thinking, well, what's the age range for this? I can tell you right now, ladies and gentlemen, the age range goes as late as you want it to go, 80, 90, 100 years old. The question is, Sean, what's the earliest an average student could really grasp the articles in there?
I would say probably fifth grade. If somebody was motivated, somebody had someone read it with them and help them understand it, it'd be hard to go younger than that.
We didn't write
for fifth graders, but a sharp, motivated fifth grader could easily read it and get the vast majority of ideas out.
Or an average first grade homeschooler. Right? Is that what you're saying?
Yep.
Okay. All right. That's my friend, Dr. Sean McDowell. Sean, you're always doing great work out there. Tell our friends where they can get this new Apologetic Study Bible for students.
Yeah, probably the easiest way would just be go to Amazon.com. They have it as cheap as I've seen it. There's leather, hardback, and paperback.
All right.
And they'll ship it with Prime. So that's probably how I would go. Or just go straight to the Brodmann Holman website. They have it there as well.
And tell people what your website is.
My website is SeanMcDowell.org.
SeanMcDowell.org. Sean puts out a lot of great short videos, too, so check him out there. We feature him quite a bit at Cross Examined as well. So, Sean, as always, a pleasure having you on.
Thanks, my friend. Talk to you soon.
All right. That's the great Dr. Sean McDowell, ladies and gentlemen. Now we're going to talk about God's crime scene right after the break, a new resource for young kids with my friend J. Warner Wallace, the cold case homicide detective. So we're going from the study Bible to God's crime scene. You're not going to want to miss it. Don't go away. You're listening to Cross Examined with Frank Turek on the American Family Radio Network. We're back in 2 minutes. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Cross Examined with Frank Turek on the American Family Radio Network. I want to mention I'll be in Russellville, Alabama next weekend. And then, if it's not totally underwater, Baton Rouge, Louisiana, the following week. You can check out our website for that, crossexamined.org. That's crossexamined with a D on the end of it, .org. And up there, you'll see my calendar. You'll also see the calendar of my friend J. Warner Wallace, who is my guest now for the second half of the program. You know that he's written some fabulous books that have been very helpful to people. One is called Cold Case Christianity. Another is called God's Crime Scene. And then the third in a trilogy is called Star Wars. No, that's not it. Forensic Faith. Well, he also authored a kids' version of Cold Case Christianity for kids, which has done extremely well. And Jim, he's on the line with me right now. We're old friends. Jim, what's the age range of, would you say, Cold Case Christianity's for?
Well, okay, so it's tough, right? Because when I first started, you just had Sean on, and Sean and I were training high schoolers on our Berkeley trips. When we first started talking, Sean said, you should write a book about the stuff you're using to train these high schoolers. And that's what became Cold Case Christianity. So I've always kind of thought that if you request more of your students, even of your own kids, you'll get more. And so it's a matter of what we're willing to request. And so I've always felt like those books were accessible to high schoolers. Now, the books we're writing now are really satisfying, though, because, and I'm glad, I'm so just grateful you would have me on for this, because this is one of those things that sometimes you'll write a book and then the publisher will say, well, let's do a kid's version. And that kid's version ends up being kind of maybe you'll have a ghostwriter who will come in who's maybe done children's books and they'll write the ghost, you know, the kind of ghost out that. Well, we really took those seriously, those opportunities, because we were working with young people to begin with. So we wanted to write books that we felt would be the kinds of books that we would want with our own kids. And so we did that. That's what this new series has really been. It's not just the kind of, you know, the simpleton version of our books knocked off. And we've really tried to think carefully about how do we engage the youngest of us, 8 to 12, because if you look back, the surveys will show you that those people who walk away from their religious beliefs in their early 20s will almost always trace back their first moments of doubt. And the polls, I've seen two polls now on this, two surveys on this, that show that it's right around as early as 10, but right around 12, 13, that's where the first questions were not getting answered to the level they wanted. And they'll always point back to those years. Well, what if we had a resource that could kind of answer the questions before they're asked? And we did it at the age of 8 to 12. That's what we're hoping to do with this series.
8 to 12. So that's what Cold Case Christianity for Kids was. Now, the new one is based on the second book in the series called God's Crime Scene. And the thing I like about this book, and I think kids are loving with this book, Jim, is it's not just a bunch of facts dumbed down from the main books. You actually have like a almost like a mystery story through here, like a real detective story. Explain how that goes.
Well, that's what we want to do, something different. Like, there's some really good resources out there for kids. Your book, I Don't Have Enough Faith to Be an Atheist, has actually been now translated into curriculum for years now and been used by probably homeschoolers probably more than any other curriculum for apologetics. And I knew there's already stuff out there that's really good, so we wanted to come at it from a slightly different angle. Even Lee Strobel's got a great series of books, All the Case for Christ, Case for, you know, everything for kids. And so we wanted to do something a little bit different. What we decided to do was to shape a series of characters that would be attending a cadet academy where they're learning how to become good detectives and they're trying to solve a mystery. Each book involves a mystery that's unrelated to Christian case-making, right? It's just a mystery related to a skateboard. One's a mystery related to a shoebox they find in an attic. And these mysteries are what I think draw kids in. We've started to get response from people who will say that my kids say, hey, just one more chapter, just one more chapter. They don't want to put it down. And it's not so much that it's the skill of either us, either writing it or drawing it or the strength of apologetics in the book. What it really is that we've crafted this around a mystery that kind of wants to be resolved. You want to resolve it in 8 chapters. And so I think students or our kids are willing to kind of turn the page to, and they're going to learn something in order to solve the mystery that we're going to stop right there and turn it toward either the case for Christ, which is in Cold Case Christianity for Kids, or the evidence in the case for God's existence, which is in God's Crime Scene. And they're doing this in the context of an academy. These characters are like explore recruits who are at a police department learning how to be detectives from the character I have in my adult books, Alan Jeffries, who is teaching them how to do this. And of course, he's always going to turn them at each point and show them how you could use this skill set to investigate the claims of Christianity.
And that's what you do in the main books, in the books for adults. But I urge parents to take a look at the kids book as well. I know William Lane Craig has come out with some little kids books on God's attributes. And I've had parents tell me, man, I learned a lot just from reading those things.
That's a good point, because a lot of times I have had parents tell me, I knew when I wrote Cold Case Christianity, that would be I could throw that across the center of the plate at 40 miles an hour and people could catch it. But I knew when we turned the corner and we're going to look at 8 attributes of the universe that I had to kind of walk a delicate line between translating it to a level that people could catch who don't have a background in cosmology, biology, philosophy, neuroscience, all those issues we're going to look at in God's Crime Scene. But I also at the same time didn't want to dumb it down so far that it would be of no value to college students who are being challenged on these issues. They need to know what the alternative explanations have been historically, and that's a lot of work, right? So I knew when I wrote God's Crime Scene that it was going to be a challenge for some who maybe weren't interested in science or biology, and for many people it was strengthened their faith who are being challenged in those areas. But then we get this chance to write the kids' book, and I'm like, oh, this is awesome, because now I can translate to a whole nother level. Now, I think that if I really think that kids can access these ideas, concepts of the problem of mind or free agency or cosmology in terms of where does the universe come from and why does it appear to be fine-tuned and what's the origin of life and why does it appear to be designed, and all these issues we're going to address, and we do address in God's Crime Scene for Kids. But I kind of think that parents, when they read this, are going to find, okay, this is now, it's translatable. So in other words, I'm kind of rewriting it at a level that I think that you're right. A lot of parents are going to say, I learned a lot from that book.
Now, when you say we, when you talk about we did this, we did that, you're writing this with your wife, Susie.
Yeah, what's great about it, this has been kind of an interesting. We have a co-author named Rob, who mm-hmm. has actually worked with Lee Strobel extensively, who is always good about kind of as an editor. He kind of will look at what we do and give it to us from a childlike perspective. But what we do, Susie and I, is we sit down chapter by chapter and pencil it out. So instead of this being ghostwritten, this really is us as a couple. And Susie's got great insight. I wish she would. She hates to do radio and
I just
TV because
told her to get a cup of coffee and come on the radio with us. She won't do it. Come on, she's right there.
Yeah, don't let Frank tell you, the audience. Get me honest with the audience here, okay, Frank? Because you know that your wife would resist as well as mine, and you're not going to have any luck with Stephanie either. So, but the point is, but what's great about this is that we had a chance to write it together, and she brings a mom's perspective to it. So, or I might introduce a concept. And she's always thinking about it. Well, okay, look, Jim, you can't say it that way. We can't do it that way because as a parent, I would not appreciate it if someone, because we're talking about concepts in law enforcement. So, for example, in the adult books, I will always be referring back to my work as a homicide investigator.
Right.
But you can't do that in a children's book. You got to be very careful where how you talk about crime, and you don't want to raise a level of sensitivity to young kids. And so she's great about reining in some of the ideas that I might throw a different way. She wants to throw it like a mom, and that's what's so great about partnering with her. So I can tell you that's always been the case, though, Frank. Even I don't know how that works for you, but I never write anything that doesn't. The first reader and editor and changer of my work has always been Susie.
Oh yeah,
chapter by chapter in
Absolutely.
Every adult book. So here I'm just asking her to jump in with me earlier and be involved in this at the more foundational level. And so when we did Cold Case Christianity for Kids, we would sit on the couch and pencil out and talk about, well, what should happen to the character, what characters should be introduced, who should be like what, you know, what's the nature of this character, does that work, and is the mystery too involved or not involved enough? And so it really was a great opportunity for us to do something as a couple.
Now, in this new book, which is God's Crime Scene for Kids, you have 8 areas that you think are better explained by some sort of supernatural being. And you create, or you talk about this this distinction between inside the room and outside the room. Why don't you explain that first, what inside the room and outside the room means, and then we'll get into probably after the break some of these 8 things that you try and teach kids through this book that are probably better explained by God, a supernatural force, than just inside, just nature.
Right. So what we do in the adult book, we talk about how in death scenes, we're always asking the question, can I explain everything that's in the room by staying in the room? As a detective, as a homicide investigator, that's what you do. You say, look, there's a dead body in the room and there's a pistol laying by his side, but that's his pistol. It was always in the room. He used to store it in the corner in a safe, and there's a note laying next to him, and it's in his handwriting on his stationery, which is also found in the room. Well, it turns out all these elements now I can actually account for by staying in the room. On the other hand, if that's not his gun, it's not registered to him, it's not it got somebody else's DNA and fingerprints on it, and there's bloody footprints leading out of the room, and that's not his paper that note is written on, and it's not even his handwriting. Well, now the best explanation is something outside or someone outside the room. So a simple way to approach this is simply to ask, can I explain everything that's in the room by staying in the room? If I can, there's no reason to invoke an intruder. Could you apply this to the universe? Can I explain everything that's in the room of the physical, natural universe by staying in the physical, natural realm? Or is there a better explanation outside of naturalism, outside of space, time, and matter? And that's the approach we took in the adult book. Here in the kids' book, what we're doing is we're saying, hey, one of the characters, Jason, discovers a shoebox in his attic. and it contains certain elements. And he has to ask the question, and he goes to his mentor, Detective Alan Jeffries, and asks, how do I solve this mystery? And they're going to take the same approach. Can I explain everything that's in the shoebox by staying in the shoebox for an answer? Or is the best explanation something, a cause, someone outside the shoebox? And if so, who could that someone be? So they're taking this very similar approach. And of course, as each thing they investigate allows them to investigate one attribute of the universe and ask the same question of that attribute. Can that be explained with nothing more than space, time, matter, physics, and chemistry? Because if it can't, we've got to jump outside of the natural universe for a better explanation. And I think that kids will get that analogy. And as we examine the case towards solving who's the owner of the shoebox and how did it get there, they'll be able also to examine the universe and ask the question, how did this get here? And what is the best explanation for everything we see in the universe?
And isn't it interesting that even if they could explain something by space, time, matter inside the universe, that still wouldn't explain where space, time, and matter came from to begin with, and why it operates the way it does. It seems to be the product of an intelligent being. Anyway, we're talking to my friend J. Warner Wallace, the cold case homicide detective. His new kids book, which adults should read as well, is called God's Crime Scene for Kids. It's the second of two kids books that go along with his trilogy of books, Cold Case Christianity, God's Crime Scene, and Forensic Faith. And we're going to talk about these eight things very briefly in the next segment. You're not going to want to miss it. I'm Frank Turek. We're back in 2 minutes, so stay right where you are.
If you find value in the content of this podcast, don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, where you can find more. Just type CrossExamine or Frank Turek on the search bar. Also, visit our website, where we add new videos, articles, and free resources daily.
Can everything be explained inside the universe that happens in the universe? Or do you have to go outside the universe for some of the explanations? That's one of the things we're talking about today with my friend J. Warner Wallace, the cold case homicide detective. He and I work together on many, many projects, including Fearless Faith and CIA. By the way, if you want a Fearless Faith seminar at your church, you need to contact us at crossexamine.org. Just go to crossexamine.org, look up Fearless Faith, you'll see it. We go to colleges. We'd go to colleges anyway, but Fearless Faith is primarily for churches, where myself, J. Warner Wallace, my guest, and Dr. Mike Adams from UNC Wilmington go and prepare parents and students for a world that's hostile to Christianity, so you can have a fearless faith. If you want to be a part of that or want to have that at your church, just go to our website, crossexamine.org, and look up Fearless Faith, and we'll get it scheduled where you are. I think the next one we're doing down near Jacksonville, Florida in October. You can check that out on our website. Now, Jim, the new book, God's Crime Scene for Kids, goes through the same eight elements or the same eight issues that the main book does, but it puts it in a mystery format for kids. What are some of these issues or some of these aspects of the universe that need to be explained and are best explained by looking outside the universe rather than staying in it?
Right. So what we try to do is cover those eight things. And I think people who have read it so far have kind of written back to me and said, okay, you know, one of the things that they really like the most, you know, I'm looking at these eight things, let me just take up front. There's the origin of the universe, the fine-tuning of the universe, the origin of life in the universe, the appearance of design in biology and biological organisms, the existence of mind, consciousness, which is a tough one if you think about trying to translate that for students, for kids, right, 8 to 12, and then free agency. Then finally, the existence of objective moral truths and obligations, and finally, the existence and presence of evil and injustice. So these are things that all of us experience and recognize exist in the universe. The only question is, can I get these things by just staying inside of naturalism with nothing more than space, time, matter, physics, and chemistry? And I want kids to look at that and really start thinking about that early. So I want to at least be able to introduce these concepts. And some of the things, like, for example, a friend of ours, Elisa Childers, who's got a blog, right? She's in Nashville area, Franklin, Tennessee. And she read the book with her daughter and then allowed her daughter to write the review of the book with her. And so her daughter says that one of the things she liked the most about it, which is like a kid to say this, is that there was a chapter in which they got to look at a brain, you know? So we're talking about mind, and there's a chapter in the book, you know, we're trying to do this again in the form of a narrative. These cadets, these investigative cadets, these detectives, young detectives are trying to learn basically kind of like junior high schoolers or maybe young high schoolers. I put the age of the characters just slightly above the age group we're trying to reach, right? Because I think that young people want to see themselves just a little bit older, and they always kind of do wish they were a little bit older anyway. So we've kind of shaped the age group for that reason, that little bit higher. And they've got to figure out, one of the scenes in the book is they go down to the coroner's office and talk to a doctor, a woman who is a coroner, and she's got a brain there in a jar, and talks to them about the difference between brain and mind. Because for a lot of people, you don't even adults, we don't think about, well, when we say we have minds, are our brains, our physical brains, or are we talking about something immaterial that works in unison with our physical brains, but is something different, distinctly different than our physical brains? Because if there are minds, a consciousness that's different than just the reactions and the physical interaction of your brain, the neurons that are firing, well, then we have to deal with how evolutionary processes, how any form of naturalism could ever account for mind, for consciousness, this thing that is immaterial. And this, for the most part, people who are naturalists deny the kinds of immaterial realities that most of us would say we experience, like consciousness. They would say it's some artifact or something that is an illusion or is a byproduct of activity in the physical brain. So I want kids to start thinking about that early. What are they thinking with? They think with their minds, or are they thinking with is that just a process that is occurring physically in their brains? Now that's a pretty think about. Even as we talk about that, Frank, that's a difficult concept for adults to kind of process through. And given the history of philosophy surrounding the problem of mind, if you read that literature, at some point you're going to think, oh my gosh, it's hard reading. But now we've got to throw it in a way that kids would, first of all, even be willing to sit still and entertain the idea, entertain these concepts. And so we did it by bringing them down to the coroner's office and making it look just kind of a little bit grittier. And for the most part, kids have responded really positively to that kind of approach because they get to see things that feel like they're part of television detective stories. And again, it also advances the narrative and it helps them to solve the mystery of this shoebox. So that's one of the areas we'll cover. Also, I had people write to me and say that they were just so pleased that we covered the problem of evil. And so a couple of the key characters in the book have suffered great loss and have kind of walked away from their beliefs about God. And the story kind of culminates in where they stand in relationship to thinking about the problem of evil. Are these things truly evil that have happened to them, or is it just their opinion, just the way they are reacting to it? If there's true evil, what is the standard of true good that they're measuring this against? So we kind of take that approach. A lot of the stuff is chapter by chapter similar to the adult book, and we did that on purpose. You know, kids' books are tough to write in the sense that you have to have an interesting narrative, which you don't have to have in adult books. Adult books, we're going to make the case point by point by point. These are eight pieces of evidence. Here's why the best explanation is outside the room. In a kid's book, we're trying to write a narrative and illustrate it. So you know, my background, I have a bachelor's degree in design and a master's degree in architecture. And so I was kind of brought up in the arts, painting, drawing, etching, things like that. It was my undergraduate work. So we pressed that into service here and had to draw illustrations for this book. And so, you know, the ratio of text to image for kids' books, for me personally, I want it to be something graphic on every page.
Well, you've done that.
You do
that
icon.
In all your books, Jim. It's not just
the
kids' books.
Well, I do, but this is a much higher, the ratio is about 50-50 in kids' books. So,
oh, yeah.
So we had to draw, I think, 84. I had to do 84 illustrations for this book to get it. And really, for a book that's really a pretty short book, and it's a kid's read, you know, it's fast. But that's a lot of illustrations. And that whole point of that was to make these concepts accessible. And but here's the thing I would really want to encourage, though, Frank, your listeners. We didn't want to just stop with books. We wanted an interactive academy experience. So we designed a website
called
Casemakers Academy, casemakersacademy.com.
Casemakersacademy.com.
Okay. And if they go there, they'll see that each book has its own interactive academy. So there's 10 sessions. There's a video for every session. There's a downloadable activity sheet, a fill-in sheet. So as you go through this chapter by chapter, you can print out the activity sheets and the fill-in sheets and watch the videos. And then students can assemble this into an academy notebook. Because, you know, my dad and I, when we went through the academy, my son too, each academy, police academy you go through, you have to assemble your notebook. And that's, you're graded based on that, right? So it's part of your graduation requirements as you assemble an academy notebook. So I've had these recruits, these cadets who take the Casemakers Academy, they can assemble an academy notebook as well. And if they do, at the end, they earn a customizable, downloadable, printable graduation certificate that kids would now are sending us pictures of them standing with their certificates. And that's one of the coolest things, right? When you see that young kids are excited about learning about the evidence for Christianity and for theism and are willing to do that kind of work. And then there's an honor cadet page at the Casemakers Academy so that kids can post their pictures on Facebook and they transfer straight over to the Academy webpage and they can kind of see how they're doing. But the idea here would be to have all three adult books transformed into academies that kids can participate in and earn a certificate. And then, of course, the next thing we're working on, as you know, you probably think the same way as I do, is we're trying to figure out, well, what do we do then that's really targeted for high schoolers? And so the next couple of years will be about producing materials.
I really think you need to have one of those academies for adults so you can have a 65-year-old man send you a picture of him with his badge on that you gave him. Now you're having six-year-olds do that. But
could you imagine? I think what I'll do is, don't tempt me. You know what I'll do? I'll Photoshop your face on the next child.
You will, I know.
You know I will. And we'll actually use that at a Fearless Faith seminar. There's Frank, who's earned an academy certificate at the Casemakers Academy. Now, you know, he's giving me a great idea. It's going to happen.
Jim, you've been rambling so long, people don't even know what you're talking about. You haven't given me an opportunity to say the book. The book is called God's Crime Scene, and this is the one for kids. And it's out. And it's amazing. You already got over 25 reviews on Amazon already. The book just came out yesterday or a couple of days ago.
It comes out tomorrow. Yesterday. Yeah, this is Saturday.
So yeah.
It just comes.
You already got all these. So you got your mom, your dad, your sisters. Who's reviewing these things for you, Jim? This is good.
I just opened up 25 accounts under different names and I posted a review. Is that a problem?
It is. It is a great book. I know because I've got we sell the Cold Case Christianity for Kids when we go on the road. Even when you're not with me, I sell it because there are kids in the audience that want something that they can just latch onto and have fun with. And that's what these Cold Case books do. Cold Case Christianity for Kids and God's Crime Scene, the two now. And I know you're going to work on a third as time goes on here. So
we've already outlined it. I'm just due by the end of the year. So we'll have that by next August. We'll have the third book, Forensic Faith for Kids, will be out. So,
all right. Well, tell again what that website is so kids can go to it right now. What's it called?
You got it. Casemakers Academy, casemakersacademy.com. And you can see what the books are all about. You can actually kind of walk through each academy and see what the academy sheets look like and to see if it's something that you would be interested in for your kids. But my hope is that we start early. And so these questions are asked and answered before they're really asked in junior high and high school. We want our kids to get the answers from us before they get the answers from others.
Excellent. Excellent. And those eight things that you mentioned are better explained by pointing to a supernatural being than just inside the universe. And so you can get the adult version, but I highly recommend you get the kids version as well, because you'll get the same basic point, not of course in the kind of detail that Jim does in the adult book, but you'll get the same basic point, which will help you grasp it. Jim, as always, thanks for being on, brother.
Thanks, brother. You know, you're your family to me. I appreciate you.
All right. That's the great J. Warner Wallace, ladies and gentlemen. Get the new book, Cold Case Christianity for Kids. The newest one is God's Crime Scene for Kids. Get it now. I'm in Russellville, Alabama, and then Baton Rouge in the coming weeks. Check it out at crossexamine.org. See you next time.